Boker Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Memchet, and we're right in the middle of this very important machlokes between Abaye and Rava. So Rava holds that hazmana lav miltahi, and Abaye holds that hazmana miltahi. So once you've defined something as having a particular use, then that is koveya its halacha. This has applications all over. So today we start off with a question against Rava. It seems to be that actually Hazmana is a Milta from the Mishnah that we had in Masechet Kelim together, Medve. Kippah Shutame Midras. So remember that something that is worn on a head is considered to be Ro'ila Midras, which is a little strange because you'd think Midras is only things that you would sit on or lie on, but the truth is you often will lie on a head covering or a scarf, and so that itself is considered to be something that is able to be Makabel Midras, and she donates it for use as a parochas, let's say, or a cover for Sefer Torah, shenitanato lesefer. At that moment, it becomes tohar from Midras, because it's no longer considered to be a kli. You're not allowed to sit on a Sefer Torah cover, and at that point, it loses its shem kli, and it can no longer be metame as Midras. However, it's a regular kli. It's not a kli for Midras, so it remains tame because it touched itself, so to speak. So in the same way that had it been a kli that was not royal midras, that comes into contact with a midras, it would have been tummy. So too, if it itself was at one point tummy midras, when it loses that shame, it's never going to be less than a kli that came in contact with midras, because it's always in contact with itself, so to speak. In any event, what changed the name of the kli? Only the fact that this woman says, I hereby donate this for use as a Sefer Torah. But it wasn't used yet. It was only defined for that purpose. So you see from there that hazmana, the preparation, designating something for particular use, is enough to make it usur. But according to Rava, or in this case, enough to make it a non-kli for midras. So according to Rava, who holds that hazmana, lav miltahi, it should not have that power. Answers the Gemara, okay, when it says that she gave it for a Sefer Torah, you're meant to understand that that meant she gave it and she actually put it around the Sefer. She didn't just say, but I don't understand. That doesn't make sense. Why would she need to do both? Why would we mention Nitanato if she was already Karachato? I mean, if she actually wrapped it around the Sefer Torah, wouldn't that be enough to make it a cover of a Sefer Torah by definition? Why would she have to also do the hazmana? So the very fact that it says she gave it for a Sefer Torah implies that she did not wrap it. No? No. Actually, Rava would hold that unless you did both, actually defined it for use of that purpose, and then you went ahead and did use it for that purpose, if you didn't have both of those things, it would not have become usur, because Rav Chisda actually explained it that way. Take a look at this maimer of Rav Chisda, the Omer of Chisda. So let's say you had this kerchief kind of thing, and you wanted to use it to always wrap your tefillin in. So you say, okay, I'm going to make this my tefillin container. And then you went ahead, and you actually did. And one day you put your tefillin in it. At that point, at that point, you cannot use it as a wallet. It's not no longer a secular thing, it's no longer chol, it has a din of tashmishei kedusha. So you see from here, however, that azmenei velo tzarbei, let's say you defined it as your tefillin container, but you never used it, or vice versa, you put your tefillin in it, but you didn't say, I want to keep my tefillin in here, then if the tefillin are taken out, you'd be allowed to use it for a wallet. So the same thing would be true over here. If this woman had also said, listen, I want this to be a Sefer Torah cover, and she actually puts it around a Sefer Torah, then it becomes a Sefer Torah cover. So in other words, Rav Chisda is saying Hazmona itself is Agnilsi, and you need to have both. Now, Abaye, obviously, wouldn't agree with this. Abaye holds Hazmona Miltehi. So according to him, Rav Chisda would be wrong. And if Azmane, Afagadolot Sarbe, if you defined it that this is going to be my tefillin container, then even if you didn't actually put tefillin in it yet, you still can't use it as a wallet. Or even if Tsarbe, if you did, however, put tefillin in it, well, then it would depend. Because, I mean, if you just put it in casually and you happen to use it one time, that's not going to define it as Tashmish Kedusha. There Abaye agrees that if you had said, I want this to be my actual tefillin holder, and you put tefillin in it, so then it would be considered to be usher to use as a wallet. But Ilo Azmane, if you hadn't set it aside for your tefillin, then Abaye would say that the actual putting the tefillin in, he would agree that would not be sufficient. Tashma. Okay, let's take a look and see whether we can bring a raya from the halacha about something that was set aside for a mate. Let's try to prove that hazmona is considered to be something meaningful and that it would be enough to asr it, which would be against Rava. So Tashma, no things that were given for a mate are considered to be anything that is going to be used by a mate is considered to be asr b'hana'a. Now, if somebody built a nefesh is like a binyan in which you have this, place for a kever, and it's a covered for the body that's kept in it. So it's like a tomb. Shibana olashim chai. But the person who had this tomb built is alive. Well, so then the fact that you have built something for the purposes of a theoretical mate, but the person is still alive, of course, it's mutar bahana'a. There needs to be the thing that makes it us, or needs to exist, and it doesn't exist. Hosifbo di musachad l'shem mate. But suppose, after an individual dies, you then went ahead and added a little bit to it. So it was just one row of additional bricks to it. It then becomes asur bahana'a, because that aspect was done after the individual died, and it becomes enough to make it miyuchad for a mace, and then it's called tashmishe hamate, and anything that is there for the mate is asur b'hana, but it doesn't say you had to actually put a body in it for it to become asur. It says it becomes asur the moment that it was built for that purpose. So apparently, this is a raya against Rava, because according to Rava, just saying so should be insufficient. No, Rava says, of course, it's talking about that we actually had put in the mate, otherwise it wouldn't have become usher. Ah, come on. I mean, so if that's the case, why would you have needed to add a little bit to it? I mean, even kilo hosif nami. If you actually put the mace in there, so then everybody agrees while the mace is there, even if originally the person had been alive, and therefore it's not considered to be hasmona according to anybody. But in this case, it would certainly be usher, would it not? Well, no, the point is, we're not talking about his being in there. What we're saying is that in the event that you added these additional level of bricks, and then you put the mace in there, and then you decided that you're going to actually be cover the mace elsewhere. So you took the mace out, and made the internment in a different place. There, the din would be that afal gav de panye, what we're trying to say, is that even if in the end there's not a mace in it, so then it still would be usher because of the fact that you had made that additional level, and that was called a hazmona, a proper hazmona, because the person had already died, and then, since you already put a mace in it, then Rava is maida, of course, as we said with the tefillin. If you said this is for the tefillin and you also put in the tefillin, then it becomes something that is considered to be usher for use as a wallet, even if you're no longer using it for tefillin. Omer Rav from Bar Papa, Omer Rav Chisda, the truth is that you could always undo the iser, because it's not as if adding that additional row of bricks is going to make it something that is permanently usher. It's that if you could get rid of it, let's say you know exactly which bricks the ones are that were added. So you could always unadd them, take them away. You're left with the original binyan, and then it becomes mutar. So ima yamakiro, kolotso umutar. Because whatever it was that had originally been the hazmana, since that hazmana was meaningless, because you mazmin it for what? For a living person? So no, for a living person when he dies. That didn't exist at the time. And therefore, it would be considered to be mutter because the rest of it had never been muzman for that purpose. Okay, I have another raya that actually has mana miltahi. Take a look at this one. Tashma. Hachotzeif kever la'aviv. A son who makes a grave for his father and in the end decided to bury his father in a different place. V'holach v'kvaro bekever acher. That child cannot use that grave for himself. And it becomes, apparently, asur b'hana'a, once he was mazmin it for his father. No, come on, isn't it clear that that's a special halacha? That's a din in kibud av, that it's inappropriate for something that he had made choshev for his father to just take it for himself. But that's not because of the halacha of hasmona. I'll prove it to you. Because take a look at the continuation of this braita. The Tani Seifa, Rabban Shimon, Ben Gamliel, Omer, even if you're chotzev avanim la'aviv, v'halachu kvaro b'mokom achar reza lo yikaver behen olamit. I mean, this sounds crazy. Somebody actually uses out stones, makes them ready because he wants to build this binyan for a covet for his father's burial. And then in the end, he doesn't use them. You can't even use those stones. Now, nobody is going to say that Hazmana is a miltahi on that early step. And nonetheless, it says over here, Arez Elo Yikaver Ben Olamit, that the son can't use them. So what does that tell you? That tells you that what we're talking about over here is a special din, not of Hazmana, but of Kibud Aviv. If you're going to tell me that this is a new halacha of honoring his father, then it makes sense that even this early stage would be enough. Listen, you did this for your father. Now you're going to just casually take it for yourself. Then it makes sense. But if you're going to tell me that this has to do with hazmana, so let me ask you something. Somebody makes threads in order to use those threads in a weave that will then be made into tachrichin for a mate. Did you ever hear anybody that says that that's considered to be hazmana? That two steps before the actual item that you're coming to make, that that's called hazmana for the mate because you wove before you even got to a weave, you spun the threads? Nobody holds that. Well, that's what this would be like. You went ahead and quarried the stones, and that would be enough to say that it would be the equivalent of building a kever? I mean, that makes enough sense. Nobody holds that. Even Abaya doesn't hold that hazmana milti so many steps before. So if Reb Shimon ben Gamliel and this bright is extending the reisha, then obviously that reisha is built on a new idea of kvod aviv. Ay, ay, ay. All right, I got another proof. All right, Tashma, how about this? I just don't really see that it's possible to say hazmana lav milta. Let me bring you right from this point. Kever chadash. So somebody dug a new grave, not for a particular individual, but at this, see, in the end, we're going to be able to explain it that way. But Lamaisa, we're going to look at it now with an assumption which will be doicha. So let's pretend now that we're talking about a kever chadash that was dug for a particular individual. And it says, mutar b'hana'a. If itil bo nefel, even if you put only a stillborn infant in it, it then becomes asur b'hana'a. But note that it says only if you actually used it. Itil ben'in, but lo itil lo. So what does that show? That actually, this is a proof to Rava, isn't it? That if you just made it as a kever, and we think it means if you made it as a kever for a particular individual, that actually this shows that Rava is right, and that Hazmana is actually lav miltehi. No. Why do you think it's focused on a stillborn, for heaven's sake? Because we're not coming to discuss the question of Hasmonei here at all. We're only coming to discuss what is considered to be a mate that will answer the kever. That's the point. We're not talking about a case where you had actually defined it for a particular person. Actually, if you had not been made till even a nephil into it, it would have still been usher if you had been masmin it. But we're not talking about masmin it. We're talking about lafukim in Rub Shimon ben Gamliel. We're saying a grave was dug, stone, and see if somebody will buy it. But this is coming to tell me that Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who says that a nephil is not going to be teifes a kever to make it usher, this is coming to say that's not true. If there was an undesignated grave, so it was just stam, and then there was a hope that somebody would buy it, if it was used even for a nephil, that would mean it would become usher because it's a real grave, like it, as if it were used for a regular mate, not just for a nephil. That's the whole point. Because since Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says a nephil would not make a grave usher, mashma learned that it does. So this has nothing to do with the machlokis Rav and Abaya whatsoever. All right. Listen, we spent a lot of time trying to disprove Rava. Let me try to prove Rava again, okay? So, Tashma, how about this? Motar ha-meitim la-meitim. So suppose you went ahead and there was a pauper that had died, and they made a special collection to be able to pay for a funeral for this ani. So the halacha is, if there was money that was left over, if it was collected for the poor, so then it should be given to the poor in that community. So it should be used dafka for that purpose. If it was for a particular mate, mutar mate, wasn't just a community need for the pauper burial fund, but rather it was something that was collected for an individual who had died, and they had money left over. So that money goes to the Yorshim, and they can use it. Now, how in the world can you use something that was muzman for the use of a mate and give it to his Yorshim? After all, if you hold that hasmana miltehi, then this would be considered to be osur because it's money for a mate, right? So you see from here that it must be that hasmana lav miltehi, which proves Rava's case. No, we're talking about over here that this was money that was collected while this individual was still alive. So he was dying, and they were afraid they wouldn't have any kind of funds to bury him, so they went around collecting money so that they would be ready to make a funeral when he died. And therefore, since over here there was no mate, and as we said before, without something there that is the source of the iser, it doesn't, everybody agrees, that's not called hasmona. Hasmona for a purpose is not what asers, it's the hasmona for the purpose which is extant. Over here, the purpose wasn't extant. So therefore, if they were Govu Michayim, so even Abaya agrees, that's not considered to be Hasmana because of the fact that there's nothing here. Really? Well, I got news for you. The Mishnah makes it clear, if you take a look at the Braisa that explains that Mishnah, that Mishnah that we just learned, it says, Motar HaMeitim LaMeitim. Motar hamet yorshav. That's what we're talking about right now. Take a look at the braita that was written to explain this Mishnah. V'toni Allah, on this Mishnah, braita explained, what do we mean, ketzad? So if you made a general magbit for any of the aniim that will die in this community, so we have a community fund, they didn't say who it's for, govu lemeitim stam, so if we don't need the money for any particular funeral now, keep it in the fund, obviously. But if Gavula made Zeh, they said this particular individual is going to need a funeral, That is Motar Hamed LeYorshav. Now, it says LeMaid. It doesn't say to a person, which means that the person was already dead, in which case it should be a typical case of Hasmona, and yet it says over here to give it to the Yorshim. So apparently the Hasmona is Lav Milta. We're back to the riot that we had to Rava, and you can't get out of it now by claiming that we had made this collection while the person was still alive, says the Gemara. Look, man, this is going to be a problem for you just as much, because Lataimer, but you're suggesting over here that it's a raya to Rava, Hasmana Lav Miltahi, but you're still going to have a problem with this Braitha. So it's very nice that you quoted one part of the Mishnah. Let's go back to the Seifa and see that Rava is wrong. So anyway, you're going to have to explain the contradiction here. Ema Seifa. Rebbe Meir Omer Lo Yiga Bahen Achi Avo Elio. This money is untouchable. We need to have Elio HaNavi come because this is a teku. We have a suffix about whether it would be mutter or not, and therefore it cannot be used for any purpose because we're not sure what to do with it. Whereas Rebbe Natan Omer, you must use this money in order to be part of the funeral of the particular individual that it was collected for. So you say, we don't have anything to do with it. Well, why not? Yasenu dimus al kivro. You can go ahead and you can build some nice type of covering over the kever for his covet, or you could make a super duper funeral by having this fancy sprinkling of expensive wine at the funeral, which is also considered to spread this in order that there shouldn't be any unpleasant smell at the funeral. So you can use it for that, whatever, find a use for it. So now that would mean that, according to Rabbi Nosson, for sure, the money is usher to be used for anything else. And according to Rabbi Meir, it might be usher. We have to find out from Elio what the psak is. So apparently, Abaye and Rava could argue that each one of these braitas, of these shitas in these braitas, would agree with them, which is highly unlikely, because then it would mean that the machlokas Abaye and Rava is a machlokas Tanoim. So what we have to say is that there's a way of understanding this Mishnah according to Abaye, and there's a way of understanding it according to Rava, which would make it consistent. How would that be? So what you'd have to say, you'd have to agree that this is true anyway, so you can't bring a raya to Rava from it. Abaye would obviously explain it according to the way he understands that Hasmona is Milta, and Rava would be Metaritz according to the way that he understands, which is that Hasmona lav Milta. Let's take Abaye first. Abaye Metaritz l'ta'amei. I say, of course, everyone in the Mishnah is following the obvious truth of my psak, namely that Hasmona is Miltahi. So what's the machlokas about over here? The Tanakama Savar, the din of the Hasmona is only on things that are needed. You can't be Masmin things and say, we're going to use this for the mate when it has no use for the mate. So therefore, only the Chazilei Tafis, what was actually usable for the funeral, that becomes Aser. And a lo chazilei lo tafis, but that could be mazmin for something that has no use, that's not considered to be hazmana. That's why, even if you hold hazmana milta, obviously the Tanakhama holds, this is not hazmana. Okay, that's fair enough. Now, Rebbe Meir is not sure whether you can make a hazmana by saying, we'll do something out of the ordinary with it, even if it's not necessary. He's not sure about that. And Rabbi Nosson is obviously completely sure. So Rabbi Meir, who's Misafkele, Tafisi, Lo Tafis, I'm not sure whether that's considered to be Hasmona. Hilkach Lo Yigabe Machi Avo Elio. Okay, so it's like finding money that's an Aveda. You don't know to whom it belongs. Who am I supposed to return it to? You keep it until Elio comes and tells you to give it back to. Rabbi Nosson, to him, it was Pshitale. He was absolutely convinced that why would it not be a proper Hasmona. You can always use it for something or other. So you could build a dimus, yasa dimus al kivro, or you could use it for a tzilof. So that's the issue over here. That's how Abaye would explain it, in which case everyone would be agreeing to the fundamental Abaye principle, which is that Azmana Milta. Rava, he would explain the opposite. He would say, on the contrary, clearly everyone in this Mishnah agrees to the grand truth of Rava, namely, Azmana Lav Milta Hi. So what's the machlokas? The Tanakhama holds that because of the fact that they were bozule, achule machal zilute gabe yorshim, since in this case it was actually a bizoyan for the maid that they went ahead and made a public magbit, this guy died, he's a pauper, couldn't even afford to leave money for his funeral. I mean, that's a terrible thing for the mate. It needed to be done. But in fact, in that case, we have to take into consideration that not the question of the hasmana, but since it was meant to be done for the mate. So shall it be given directly to the mate? Or is the mate mochel in the sense that we understand that a person would much rather that funds that were collected and that even though it was for him, he's happy that he would suffer this bizoyan if at least his yorshim end up getting some money out of it. Rabbi Meir is misupak, whether we can assume such a thing or not. I mean, maybe he would not have wanted to go through this suffering such an indignity that they're going around collecting for me. I didn't need it. Okay, so hilkach lo yigabeh. If that's the case, he's not meichel that it should be given to the yorshim. It was a suffering for him. Whereas Rabbi Nassim says, well, obviously, he wouldn't have wanted for us to make a collection to be befaza him just to get money for his heirs. And therefore, the only thing we can do with this, having put him, so to speak, through this, is yasedimo sal kivro ozilif lifnei mitato. So that means that we cannot use that Mishnah as a proof in either direction, not to Rava, not to Abaye, none of the shitas in that Mishnah, not the Tanakhama, not Rabbi Meir, and not Rabbi Nosson are relevant. Okay, let's again, we tried really hard to prove Rava's wrong. I want to try again to prove that Rava is right. That Azmana Lav Milti. So here's a case in a Braita where we had a child who died and the parents are so distraught that they're throwing everything that they own towards the body of the child. And they say, the hell with everything that we have. Nothing is worth anything to us. And throwing all of the things in the house. And usually, if you would throw things on the mate, you would throw things into the kever of the mate, it would become usur. So it's a mitzvah on everybody that's over there to rescue them. Why in the world should we allow them in their distraught state to destroy their own things? Go and take it away so that it's not buried with the mate. Now, the question is, if you're going to tell me that Hasmona is milti hi aliba da Abaye, it's too late. Because if the parents were already mazmin, so to speak, and they said, we want these things to be buried with the mate, so then there's no way to save it. Once they were thrown towards the mate, so there are already things that were muzman to be buried with the mate, and then they become azerbana'a. No, this is similar to temporary insanity. This is not a rational decision in which a person was mazmin. Hasmana miltei means that a person in full control of his facilities and faculties of mind, he knows what he's doing, but bishbishum merarayu, that's not considered to be hasmana. But maybe if it were a real hasmana, then it would be, in fact, impossible to be matzil the begadim because they had already answered it. No, wait a minute. If that's the case, that it's because of temporary insanity, so that it would allow what the Braita said about it, namely, Umr ibn Shimon ben Gamliel, when do we say this? Only if the things that they threw towards the mate had not actually landed on the mita on which the mate was being taken out to burial. Rishlon nagu b'mita. But once they actually touch the mita, so then they become usher. But according to you, how could they become usher if there's no human that answered them. In other words, essentially, we're saying that this is temporary insanity, and what they want, it doesn't make any difference. So, look, if you would tell me that basically it only is a question over here whether it has mana milte, which is what I was trying to prove. So then what we would be saying, just throwing them towards the bait is only hasmana. And since we hold like Rava, I was trying to prove to you that we hold like Rava. Since we hold like Rava, so hasmana is lav milti. However, once it actually becomes part of the mitat hameit, so at that point, it's not just hasmana. At that point, it's like the equivalent to putting the mate in the kever, so to speak. And over here, you put the begadim into the kever. But if you're telling me that the whole point over here is a temporary insanity plea, what the heck is the difference? I don't understand whether it actually touched the mita or not. I mean, if a monkey would have come along and taken things and thrown them on the mita, would it be usher? Of course not. Well, that's what you're saying. So the only difference between touching the mita and not touching the mita, it appears to me, is if the explanation of the whole halacha in this Mishnah is fundamentally the question of hasmana. And then this proves that hasmana lav milti. So I would be right in bringing a raya to Rava. So Ula said, actually, we can make it work, even according to Abaye. It's not a raya to Rava, because there were places where they would put the mate on a stretcher, and then they would bury the stretcher with the body on it. That's what we're talking about over here. So we're talking about a mitah nikberet imo, and over there, if people would run over to save the clothing that was being thrown onto this mitah, people who saw it might think that they're taking off things that were actually usher because they were needed by the mate. They see begadim coming off, they would think these begadim were meant to be the tachrichim. And that would cause a confusion la-locha. But it's not really that these things are usher. It could be that they're not usher at all. That would be the point, because indeed of the insanity. And we're right, and it's not a function of hasmana. It's a function of presence of mind. Okay, let's see if we can prove at least that Abaye has got basis in a Mishnah or a Braita. Tashma, in the Braita, it says that if you make a kiss for tefillin, kiss she'asa ola niyagbo tefillin, asur la niyagbo ma'od. So you're not allowed to use it for keeping money if it was a tashmish kedusha. And it says over here, you only had in mind to put your tefillin in it, and it's already asur laniyagbo ma'ot. If it wasn't made for tefillin, it was just something that was handy once, and you put tefillin in it, so then it would be okay when you take the tefillin out to use it as a wallet. But here it says if it was made for tefillin, apparently without having put in the tefillin, it would automatically become usher. Now that's a raya to Abaye that has mana milti. No, not necessarily. Maybe the meaning of that first part is that if you were mazmin it and you put in the tefillin, then you can never use it for a wallet. Usher niyagbo ma'od. And that is exactly what we learned before, like Rav Chista, that you need to have both. You need to have hasmana and the actual putting it in. But if you just put it in, we said nobody would hold that just putting it in casually would turn it into tashmish and kedusha. That would not be a problem. Okay, tashma. Let's see if we could bring a raya from this braita. A guy goes to an oman. So this is a craftsman who's manufacturing, and he orders a tick for a Sefer Torah, or he says, make me a nartik for tefillin. And we made it. It says over here, Ad shelo nishtamesh behem kodesh, mutar lishtamesh behem chol. Nishtamesh behem kodesh, asur lishtamesh behem chol. Okay, so in other words, even though I ordered it, it was manufactured for that purpose, pure hasmana, it didn't make it usher until it was actually used. This seems to be pretty clear that Rava is right. Says the Gemara, you're right. This Braita actually does prove that Rava is right. The thing is that it turns out that it's a machlokas tanaim, and that's why this is not considered to be a tiyuf to abaye. In reality, tanaim. We have a machlokas tanaim as to whether hazmana miltehi or lo. The Tanya. Somebody makes tefillin, and then he covers them over with gold. All right? Well, one of the dinim that is halachah l'mishmei Sinai is that you cannot have anything but the or, behema, tahira, and not anything else that covers the tefillin. So if you now cover this tefillin with gold, you may think it looks very pretty, and you could sell it at your conservative shul Judaica shop, but they're not kosher tefillin. Or let's say, talaleim or shalbema tmeya. Let's say you make the top of the tefillin out of a non-kosher animal. This is this week's parsha that we just read. This is Laman Tiyah Toras Hashem Beficha. You need to be able to eat your tefillin. Well, they become posel. But if you made them out of orbe matahora, they would be kosher even though you did not do the tanning of the or. You did not do it l'shem mitzvah tefillin. So even though there was no ibud l'shma, it would still be okay. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, Aymer, af or beima Torah psulot ad shiye abdu l'shma. No, not true. You'd have to actually do the
sons.
Who's talking around here and not muted? It looks like an Ari.
Oops. Sorry,
you're not making up for not bringing Tzuri, I can tell you right now. So,
hold on.
We caught you. Hey, Ari, you're still open.
That's called a lion roar?
Sort of a weak roar today. Okay. So this machlokas, now the truth is there's tremendous machlokas rishonim about how to understand this. I mean, mamish min hakatse lakatse, absolute opposite ways of learning the sugya. Okay, but what we'll do is we'll take the way that Rashi is learning. So the Tanakama is saying that there's no point in doing the ibud lishma. Why? Because what's the mitzvah of doing it lishma if anyway it wouldn't be more than hazmana, and hazmana is not going to be a miltehi. So Rashi makes the machlokas over here dependent in the machlokas of whether hazmana miltehi. Tosfos says, yes, it's true, but in the opposite direction. The Ramban says, no, actually, they're two really independent machlokas in, but there were assumptions that it would be interdependent. Okay. All right. So we'll take Rashi's approach. So Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says, you need to do the Ibud Lishma. So if you need to do the Ibud Lishma, that means that Machshava Lishma gives Kedusha to the tefillin. So apparently, according to Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, the Hazmana is Milta. Whereas the Tanakh says, Hazmana lav Milta. So apparently there's a machlokas tanoim, which is the machlokas between Abaya the Rova. Now, Amalei Ravina the Rova. The whole case that you spoke about is like really weird, because you talked about the case before that we're making the actual beged lemeit, we said. So we're making these shrouds for him after he died, because, I mean, if it was before the person died, it wouldn't be hazmana according to anybody. You need to have that which asers extant in order for the hazmana to be meaningful. I mean, is there really such a case that we would actually be making the tachrichin for the mate after he died? What would that mean? We would take the mate and put him aside in a room to rot for a couple of days while we go ahead and we weave. I mean, it takes a lot of time to weave tachrichin. You said weaving tachrichin. We talked about the whole question, you know, about is this similar to a case where you're actually spinning the threads in order to weave? I mean, the case is a ridiculous case. Omer Ravina L'Rova, I mean, you're talking about something that is not going to ever happen. Mi'ika duchta de romu be mate, the argi beged lemate. You're telling me there's a place where we let the mates like sit there in a morgue for a few days while we have people that are making the begadim for the mates for the tachrichin. That's, I mean, mamash a bizayin la mate. You're telling me that they didn't have a way to make the tachrichin. It's very simply that take a sheet, cut up the sheet, and then sew it. I mean, why would we be making the tachrichin? Omar Lesa, Rava said to Ravina, well, I happen to know that there is such a place. In Harpania, that's exactly what they do. Harpania was a very, very poor city, and they would have to go around. If somebody died and there was no money for a funeral, they would go and make a magbit after the person died, and then they would make the simplest type of tachrichin, which meant they were not going to tear up a sheet, which is very expensive. So they would make, like, basically very low-quality tachrichin, but they had to be made. They weren't the type of begadim that a living person would use. So that's what we were talking about, that it was being woven in Harpania. What's your problem? Anyway, l'maisa darash marimah, that the halacha goes here according to Abaye, that hazmana is miltehi, whereas Rabbanan say, the halacha is like Rava, that has mana lav miltahi, and says the Gemara, it's true that Hilchot HaKavati de Rava, that has mana is lav miltahi. Now, we said before that, just in passing, that somebody who was talking about the din all along, about someone who is a haruge bezdin. Now, in passing, that makes you think about the fact that there's others that are not haruge bezdin, but that are nonetheless harugim, which we would have to define legally. What would that be? Haruge melech, because a person who's morid b'malchut can also be executed by the melech for the simple fact of his merida. But there, we have a different halacha. Tana rabbanu, haruge malchut, if someone is killed by the Malchut for doing something against the Malchut, then the government takes whatever it is that they own, and it does not go to their heirs. It's only Haruge Beit Din that Nichseyem LeYorshin. Rabbi Yehuda Aimer? No, even Haruge Malchut Nichseyem LeYorshin. Now, it could be that this machlokas is dependent on the earlier machlokas that we had. Remember about whatever is written in Parshat HaMelech, the Melech is Mutar Bahem. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he's not. And it was just there, Lo Ne'amar Ela La'ayem Aleihem, that that whole parsha was only said in order to make people aware of the terror that they have to have, that their bakasha of having a Melech, and what that can lead to. But it doesn't mean that the melech is mutterbeb. So maybe that's the machlokas. Because Rabbi Yehuda says, look, just because it says that he can take your property doesn't mean he's really allowed to take your property. Masha'inkein, if you hold like the Tanakama, so then that would be the mucker for saying that the government has a right to actually take everything you own in the event that you were murdered by Malchus. And that is what the Rambam says. The government makes a ruling that anybody who tries to escape from paying customs is going to have everything that he brings into the country confiscated. That's a halacha that is correct for the melech to do because of the Parshas HaMelech. The same thing would be true over here. The Murid B'Malchus can have his property confiscated. So this is a machlokas. Now, Omer Leila Reb Yehuda, we have a beautiful raya that the Chachamim bring to Rabbi Yehuda. V'alo kvar nemar, hinei bekerem navot asher yarad sham lirishto. So, we know that Achav HaMelech wanted very much to have this beautiful vineyard that was owned by Navot. Navot says, I'm not going to sell you for any money. I'm not going to sell you my family's inheritance. And so because of that, Izdevel went ahead, hired witnesses to claim that Navot had cursed the king, and that therefore the king would be, they would kill Navot, and the king would take the vineyard. So if this was said over Beferish to Eliyahu HaNavi, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, go and tell Ahav what's going to be happening to him because of the death of Navot. And he tells Eliyahu HaNavi he is in the Kerem Navot that he wants to take as an inheritance. So apparently that was the whole point. So you see clearly that the king does confiscate the property, right? Said Rabbi Yehuda, no, not right. Actually, Navot was a nephew. Ahav was a nephew over here and was in line for the inheritance because he was the son of Navot's brother, which made him a cousin to Navot, and he would inherit it as a nephew because it went back to the father. And then the father of Navot was dead, and it went to him. So he was actually in line to inherit. So it was a very smart move on the part of Ezeva, but not because he was the king. It was because he was an heir. What? I mean, but there were so many children that Navot had. I mean, why in the world would Ahav be the one to inherit Navot? No, he killed all of the kids. What do you think? She had them all killed. Amar lam otoved banavarag. Shenemar im lo et me navot vet me vanavra iti. This was part of that nifius that Eliyahu was told, say to Ahav, what's going to happen to you because I see the blood of Navot and the blood of his children. So apparently he had killed the children as well, leaving him as the next in line of the heirs, and that would get him the Kerem Navot. Rabbanan. Rabbanan who claim that the Navot had plenty of sons, and they would have inherited him. And the only reason that Ahav was able to take Kerem Navot was because he was the king. So how did they explain the fact that Ahav had the kids killed? Obviously, that was in order for him to inherit, which actually proves Rabbi Yehuda is right. No, that's not what it means. Remember what it says by Kayin and Hevel? There's this demei, kol demei achicha. We had this before. And the demei achicha were the children that he potentially could have had. So in murdering him, you made all of those people dead, so to speak. So I see that as blood that you spilt. That's the demei achicha. Same thing is true over here. I see the children that would have been born had Navot been allowed to live, but that they hadn't been born yet. But it doesn't mean that the actual children that had already been born were killed. So they disagree still with Rabbi Yehuda. And the only reason that he inherited was because, despite the fact that there were sons, but he was the king. And Amorid B'Malchus, the king, confiscates the property. That's the point. Well, wait a second. Wait a second. Take a look at the pasuk. It says that Ezeval hired these witnesses, and they came to say, Beirach Navot Elohim Bamelech. Explain that to me. They testified that Navot had cursed God and the king. Now, why did they have to say he cursed the king? If the idea was that he was going to inherit because he was the next in line, if he cursed God, they were going to kill him anyway, and therefore he would still be next in line. So it must be that the whole point is that it's because he was accused of cursing the king, and that's Amrita B'Malchus, and therefore the king was able to confiscate it. So apparently, Rav Yehuda is wrong. It's only being confiscated because of the cursing of the king. Yeah, if we say that the money that a Mored B'Malchus owns is confiscated, that explains that the witnesses had to say that he cursed the king. But according to the Mandi Omar, who says, no, Rabbi Yehuda says it goes to the Yorshim. So then what was the point? Why did we need to say that he cursed the king? Lomali V'melech would have been enough to say that he was a blasphemer, and then he would have been killed. And Ahav was the next in line, so he would have gotten the Kerem, right? Says the Gemara, and Rabbi Yehuda says to that, for heaven's sakes, and you don't have the same problem? So according to you, that the reason that Ahav was Yoresh Kerem Navot was because he was the king. So why did they have to say that he blasphemed God? They could have just said, he was Mered B'Malchus, and he cursed He cursed the king? Ella, I mean, obviously, the whole idea over here is to just build a case where the mobs are shouting for the blood of Nevot. We want to make it look like this guy is an outrageous. He curses the Lord. He curses the king. So we wanted there to be either in the court or in the streets. We wanted people to be angry so they wouldn't look too deeply into the case and to figure out that this was all framing. So now, go to the court of Rabbi Yehuda. He was also accused of cursing the king for the same reason. Lafushe Ritzka. We want to build the case against him, but not because we need that in order to take the money. All right, but wait a second. I have another point. I know Diftiv. Look, if you tell me that when the king kills somebody, that the money goes to the government, that would explain why Yoav runs to the Ohel Hashem and he grabs hold of the Mizbeach. So this was talking about after David HaMelech was Nifter. And remember that in his last will and testament to his son Shlomo, so he talks about the fact that Yoav had killed Avner Ben-Ner, the Shnei Sarei Yisrael, Avner Ben-Ner, and Amasa Ben-Yeter, and see to it, says David, see to it that you handle this problem, because, you know, I couldn't kill him when I was alive, but he should not die on his bed. But he was also, he mentions to Shlomo, he was considered to be a Mered B'Malchus, remember, because he was going against the Shlomo appointment by being one of the followers of Adonio. So there were basically two completely different things that had taken place over here. And the question is, why did he run to go ahead and grab the Karnot HaMizbeach? Now, what's fascinating is, this is the Brisker Rav points out, that actually, if you look carefully at the mitzvah that David HaMelech gives Shlomo, he says to him, that Sha'asa Li Yoav Ben Zruya, and he took the damim to make shalom, to make milchama b'shalom, by killing the two people of Avner Ben Ner and Amasa Ben Yeter. So why did he say Sha'asa Li? I thought the problem was that he had killed. So apparently, says the Brisker Rav, Shlomo was given an option of the Aseka Chochmatcha. You use your brains and figure out which one would be more effective to use against Yoav. You can either accuse him of being a Morid B'Malchus, which he was, or you could take him to Sanhedrin and not handle it yourself, depending on the political situation and what would be more effective at the time. You make the determination of what to do. So basically, the difference between the Horuk B'Sanhedrin because of his being a murderer, or his being Oruk as a Merid B'Malchus, was already set up in advance by David. So it's clear that there's a difference between them. Fine. Now, Yoav goes, and when he realizes he's a dead man, he runs into Mishkan Shiloh, and he grabs on to the, I should say Mishkan Shiloh, he runs into the Ohel Hashem. In those days, we're waiting still for the Binyan of the Beis HaMikdash after the death of Eli and the Churban of Shiloh, and he grabs onto the Karnot HaMizbeach. Now he's thinking that that's going to save his life. And then Benayo comes with the Tzivui of Shlomo HaMelech and says, get out of there. And Yoav says, no, I'm not getting out of here. I'll die here. Kipo Amut. So why did he want to die here? Because here means I'm next to the Lishkat HaGazit, and I will die by the Sanhedrin. At least that way, my heirs will get my money. But if I come out and Shlomo kills me because I'm a Mered B'Malchus and I don't go to Sanhedrin, so then I lose my money. So I'd rather die here. But if you hold that Nechseyem LeYorshim, what does he care? I mean, why would he hold on to the Karnot HaMizbeach, demanding that the Bezdin should be the one that kills him? I mean, either way, he's dead, and you're claiming that the money would go to his Yorshim no matter what, right? Okay, that doesn't prove anything. I mean, he's just trying to delay the end. You know, if I walk out now, I know you're going to kill me like this. We have to go through a whole waiting until you get me chayev misa and so on. So that could be the only point. So anyway, meanwhile, Binayahu comes back to Shlomo HaMelech and he tells him that Kol Diber Yoav, the Ko Anani, look, this is what Yoav said, and I answered him. Now, it doesn't say what that answer is, right? So the Gemara wants to explain now, okay, the Pasuk didn't say what. The Pasuk just said, this is what he said, and this is what I said. What did he say? So what he said, Omar Le, Yoav had said, go tell Shlomo HaMelech, look, you've got to make up your mind. You cannot do two things to me. Zil Emele, go tell Shlomo, Tarte lo tavi b'haigavra. You have no right to do two terrible things to me. You have a choice. If you are going to murder me because of the fact that I killed Avner and Amasa, so then the curses that your father had given to me, the terrible things that were going to happen to me based on your father, where he said that, oh, there's always going to, the whole family of Yoav is always going to be ill with Zivas and Saras and so on. We'll analyze each one in a moment. Well, that was unfair because in the end, I was going to be killed for it. And therefore, why am I being cursed? And if you want those curses to be Mikuyam, that's fine. But if you're going to kill me, you know what those curses are going to do. They're going to go back on your head. Because if a person curses another individual and those curses were unwarranted, the curses remain, but they have their impact on the one who said them. So that means that everything that David HaMelech said about me is going to happen to you. So, okay, are you ready to accept that on yourself? Then go ahead and kill me. If you're not ready to accept that on yourself, then you can't kill me. So which one do you want? So you can't do both. Ikatatale, if you're going to be killing me, kabule latute delat yavuk. So you have to accept on yourself the curses of your father. But if you're not ready to accept those curses, and I'd advise you not to be ready, shavke, leave me to live the leker b'leitute delat yachavuk, and that way I will have the curses on me, and you will be free. What does the king say to Binayahu? Vayom elo hamelach, asei kasher diber, do what he said. So that means, in other words, he accepts upon himself that equation, upagapo, and kill him, ukavarto, and bury him. But that means that Shlomo HaMelech accepted those curses. Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Rav, that's correct. Kol klalot shekilel David et Yoav nitkaimu bizaro shel David. Amazingly, if you take a look in history, everything that David HaMelech had said was going to happen to Yoav happened to David's family. Whoa, take a look. Al yikareit mi beit Yoav zav umetzora, horrific. So there should never be a time that in the mishpacha of Yoav, there won't be a zov, a mitzora, a person who can't walk and needs to lean on a cane, person who is killed by the sword, and individuals who don't have anything to eat. Let me show you that each one of those things was true. Rechavam became a zov. So Shlomo's own son, how do I know that? Because it says, V'amelech Rechavam nitametz la'alot b'merkava lanus l'Yerushalayim. So the people were furious at Rechavam, at the way that he responded. So he had to really force his way to get into this merkava to escape to Yerushalayim from the Am. And why is it mentioning the Merkava? Because the din of Zav is built around Merkav. The Chol HaMerkava Sheikava Lavazav Yitma. So it's a remez that he was suffering from Zivut. Mitzora, well, that we know. Uzio, when he wanted to act as a Kohen, and he wasn't a Kohen. And it says over there, Ubecheskato, when he was so powerful, he became so stuck up. Gavali Boat HaShchit, it absolutely corrupted him internally. Vayimal ba'ashem elokav, and he went against the Torah to be Vayavo Alechal Hashem Laktira Lamizbeach Haktoret. He wanted to build. He wanted to come and burn the Ketoret. And at that moment, what does it say? Batzarat Zarcha B'mitzcho. So Tzarat became evident on his forehead in front of everybody. But here's another grandson of David HaMelech who becomes a Mitzora. And the other thing that he said, there's always going to be someone in the family who can only walk with a cane. Sure enough, that was Asa, another grandson of David. Rak leit ziknato chala et raglav. He became ill on his feet and was unable to walk. Yom Rav Yehuda Amarav, what happened to him is that achazo podagra. He got this terrible podagra, which seems to be gout from the description, and was unable to walk. Omele marzuta bered Rav Nachman, how, what is that like? What does it feel like? Omele kemachat bipsarachai. It's as if you've got needles going through your muscles when you try to walk. How did Rav Nachman know? Well, could be that he himself suffered from gout. He was makabal this as a Kabbalah from his Rebbe. Mirabe Avigomerle. Vibaitema, and you know, it's very possible. We find oftentimes that the Chachamim will say things that they had no way of knowing personally, but Bibchinat Soda Hashem Lireav Ubrito Lahodiamet, it says in Tehillim. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu is megala things to a person that he wouldn't have known on his own. Anyway, that was not all that David HaMelech had cursed him with. He also cursed that there should be a nofel b'cherem, people who will be murdered. Well, that's Yoshio. Dechtiv vayoru hayorim la'melech Yoshio. The Omer of Yeram Arav shasu kol gufo kechvara. By this sword, they ended up puncturing his body with so many arrows that he looked like a sieve. And the last thing that David HaMelech had said, and there will be chasar lechem, people who won't have enough to eat. Yes, that apparently is what happened to Yechonyo, the melech that was taken by Nebuchadnezzar, and it said, aruchato aruchat tamid nitnalo, that they provided him with things to eat, and that was after Nebuchadnezzar had died, and then Nebuchadnezzar's son would give him what to eat, but apparently until then, he was a chaser lechem. He didn't have what to eat. So we see, Omer of Yudam Rav, this is what people say. Einodim to Amrei Inche, you know, it's better to be the one who's cursed than the one who gives the curse. Tehe luta velo tehe lata. Because it's worse in the end when a curse comes back from the maker of the curse. And it's better for you to be affected by others where maybe the curse is going to go against the person who made the curse instead of you. But when you make the curse, the likelihood is that you're going to be the one who will suffer. You see, this kind of thing happens quite often. Okay, gentlemen. This, yes.
In the Greek, the pod all has to do with feet. It's like pod.
Sorry.
Podagra is foot. The pod is the foot.
Now, obviously, it's in English today still, yeah. So what are you saying? You have a riot to that it's gout?
No, I look, this is just a small dictionary, but all the pod words are tender-footed, this-footed, something
to put the feet. In English as well?
Right.
Even petals. Right. Everything is like...
Right. And we have the food ration of Yechonya.
Yes,
we have the... Right, the Babylonian,
yes,
great.
I remember
finds
that.
The Babylonian food ration, Yechonya for Melech Yehuda and for his kids, this much.
Unbelievable, that's right.
It's incredible.
Wow. That actually survived, yes. Unbelievable, wow. Thanks for reminding me. Amazing.